Radio Superfly im Gespräch.
Er gilt als einer der wichtigsten Dub-Produzenten überhaupt. Ein Mann, der aus Echo, Bass und Delay ganze Klangwelten baut. Adrian Sherwood. Seit den späten 70ern prägt er mit seinem Label On You Sound die Musik zwischen Reggae, Post-Punk, Industrial und elektronischer Musik. Er hat mit jamaikanischen Größen wie Lee Scratch Perry und Horace Andy gearbeitet und gilt bis heute als absoluter Meister am Mischpult. Sein aktuelles Album heißt The Collapse of Everything und schon der Titel klingt nach kontrolliertem Chaos. Genau darum geht es auch bei seinen Live-Shows. Sounds werden zerlegt, neu zusammengesetzt, mit Effekten durch den Raum geschickt, bis plötzlich etwas komplett Neues entsteht. Hier das Gespräch mit einem echten Soundarchitekten, Dub-Pionier und Bassfanatiker Adrian Sherwood. Hi there, hi Adrian, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Adrian, when it comes to Jamaican music culture, you had the advantage of living in the United Kingdom, and you've said once that hearing ska music blasting out of London clubs changed your life as a kid. Do you still remember what fascinated you most about those sounds?
Well, I was very lucky. I grew up in a very multiracial thing. I wasn't in London. I was in a town called High Wycombe, and we were listening to Tamla, you know, Rod Stewart, T-Rex, all the pop tunes, but the reggae just kept coming and coming because of all the West Indian friends, and everyone liked ska because it had lots of energy, and I liked all the records that were gimmicky, you know, the ones that had funny intros and the Rude records and lots of Lee Perry stuff. I didn't even know who Lee Perry was or who made the records at that time. But we loved, obviously, Al Capone and One Step Beyond and Boys Town Ska, Guns of Navarone, all those tunes. And as the time went on, we got more and more into the kind of eccentric reggae stuff and the Rude ones. Being little boys, we couldn't believe such rude records could be made, and that was my starting point.
One step beyond!
What did reggae and dub offer you in the late 1970s that punk music, new wave or mainstream music didn't?
Well, it was the early 70s. Late 60s, early 70s, I got into reggae, really, not late ones. But by the late 70s, I was making records and putting them out. But when I first started getting into it, I liked other things as well. But the Jamaican stuff, made some of it made in England, but most of it made in Jamaica. I just got quite obsessed. It just was so diverse. You know, the dub was incredible because it didn't have people singing Rasta this, Rasta that, which is cool, but we preferred the instrumental stuff, sit and smoke a joint and or a cup of tea or whatever, and just like, yeah, this is great. And then you had all the great songs, you know, Bob Andy, on and on and on. I can name so many. Gregory, you know, Bim Sherman eventually, and then all these songs coming just blowing your brain. It was such an incredible rich time. And it was like, the idea was it was a collective to start with. But it soon became very clear that I was holding all the debt for the company. And the idea originally was we were going to make records and license them to big companies so they could promote what we made. But it didn't kind of work out like that. So I ended up licensing lots of the bigger titles, but people weren't interested in licensing Head Charge or Creation Rebel, or which ended anyway, or the other things. But if you look at the early doors, I put them on other labels, but that didn't even work out either. So I ended up just having to put things out on the main label and just blundered my way on ever since. It's not been the easiest path.
When you founded On You Sound Records in 1979, Did you already have a clear vision, or did the label evolve through experimenting maybe?
Well, what we had, we were basically recording the people around us who happened to be from all different backgrounds. So that was brilliant because we had people from West Indian, English, Irish, or Japanese, everything amongst us. People looking on you really liked it because we reflected England really, really well. You know, that was my overview. I didn't actually plan a we're going to be the punky reggae party or something. I just did what my instincts told me, and I was amongst some brilliant people, you know.
You have worked across reggae music and dub. There were influences from post-punk, industrial, in general, electronic music. Did you always ignore genre boundaries, or did you consciously try to break them?
I just wanted to make... What I always did, and I still try and do, is make my productions leap out of the speakers. That's what I wanted to do. So whatever I was recording... and mixing, I applied the techniques of the Jamaican producers and the wonderful heritage and skills that they had. I tried to apply that to my productions, but add something really refreshing. And literally, to this day, I'm listening in my lounge. I want it to be jumping out of the speakers at me. And that's what I did attempt to do very early doors. And the big influences on me were obviously Mark Stewart was a massive influence on me, taping up the meters so he overloaded everything. And then he introduced me to the schools of Brian Geiss and William Burroughs and all these things that were nothing to do with where I was coming from. So I got my education while I was going along.
Has digital technology expanded your creativity through the years? Because you started when, working in a studio was kind of rough or sometimes an adventure, and it became easier. Or do you think that something, has been, I don't know, lost in the last centuries, we have to say?
Things change, we can't say. I mean, things, if you look at Prince Fatty, Mike Melanconi, I don't know if you know Mike, but he's got all the vintage gear, and he's really kept the flame going for that vintage sound. So if anybody wants to go to that, go and look at Mike. I'm bigging him up because he's actually a fantastic engineer. And you can go forward where people are just, everything is digital. We try and marry the old and the new together with Onew, but I can't afford to maintain a big tape machines and all the things that Mike does. But I still have got all the references here in my head on what I would like to achieve with the finished sound. So I try and embrace all the new things, which are fantastic. I don't engineer anymore, really. I just mix the end. But the old days, I'd be putting the tape on, sticking the things in myself and working throughout the night, making funny records. But those days, I look back with happy memories on them. But it's time's changing. You've got to move with the times. And I embrace both. So.
Younger generations constantly rediscover your work. Why do you think the On You Sound record aesthetic still resonates today?
Well, I think it's the same with anything. People say to me, oh, thank you, Adrian, for letting us play on a record, or thank you. Sometimes people say whatever, and I say, well, we only use you because you're very, very good. And if you listen back to our old records, I think the one thing I'm proud of is a lot of them stand the test of time. They still sound, at worst, kind of interesting or annoying or something, you know. And I think the standard, you know, that I try and set, and I want something now, if I'm making something, to have charm, leap out of the speakers, have things that don't add up about it. You can't, each time you listen to it, you hear something else. So I think the reason a lot of the work's lasted is because it's got some of those things about it. And I think a lot of tunes now are missing innocence, charm, fun, and those things. I've tried to instill that in anything I'm doing. And working with Lee Perry taught me you've got to make it magic or mischievous, you know, naughty, like a naughty kid playing. That was Lee. And those things rub off on you. And I think anybody that worked with Lee, which a lot of people have, they would all have got that sense of fun, magic and mischief from him. Putting together, having been honoured and lucky enough to work with the likes of Lee Perry, Mark Stewart, Prince FireEye, et cetera, Bim Sherman, Stile Scott, Doug Wimbish. I've got Doug Wimbish upstairs in my house at the moment. He's coming, he's staying with me for a minute. He's one of my best friends, you know. So we you know, working with them makes me look good, basically. And then adding my own thing I add to it. All the records, in my mind, should have sold 10 or 100 times more than they did. But going back on it, they, what the hell? People can discover them. They're there, like little works of art. if people discover them and like them, I'm very happy.
Let's talk about your current album, which was released last year. The title, The Collapse of Everything, sounds deeply apocalyptic. But the album itself also feels reflective and hopeful. So what kind of collapse were you thinking about while making it?
I just think it fits the world at the moment. You know, we've got these shocking, you know, behaviour of world governments or all over. You know, our government is absolutely toothless. We've got the destruction of like Palestine, the Gaza, the horrible things going on Ukraine, the horrible things for the citizens everywhere, where people just aren't needed anymore. I could go on and on and on and on and on, but the title is just fits the world at the moment. And that's how people are waking up every morning feeling, oh my God, and they've got, you know, Gaza in their head, or they've got their own problems with feeding themselves in their minds. Where I live, it's quite a poor town, and, you know, there's issues with getting food to people, and it's just really, it feels like really dystopian times. But yeah, on the album, it's being instrumental. It's basically, there are tracks on there about the great rewilding, and I think we need solutions in the world of how to unify people, gather people. And I think in our dub world, the dub arena is quite political, though it's instrumental, because it gathers good people, people who care. It also gathers like-minded people who might be animal rights. You know, we belong to the, Compassion in World Farming and all this stuff. So the dub arena tends to gather conscious people, and that's what I'm very proud to be a part of. And that album, the title, it's I think it's fitting, isn't it?
The work on the record was also shaped by the loss of close collaborators and friends, like Mark Stewart, for example, or Keith LeBlanc. Did making this album feel more like mourning, documentation, or transformation, maybe?
I didn't see it emotionally like that. I was very sad at the loss of Mark and Keith. It's life, though. You know, life, you know, I believe in the spirit world. Who knows what awaits us? It's just, you know, I'm waiting today. I'm expecting my my son's wife's having a baby. It's a few days late. Like, there's a new life, and God bless, it's a wonderful thing. And then somebody, we die, you know, and it's, I like the Buddhist view of things, really. You know, after you're dead, a few hours later, people will be eating, but you won't be there. So life's for the living. But Mark, Lee Perry, Keith LeBlanc, they all live on in me, and their other friends, and we carry their vibe and love inside us. And I sound like a hippie, but that's how I feel.
Wonderful final words. Mr. Adrian Sherwood, thank you for the interview. And all I can say now is see you in Vienna at yes. the Dub Champions Festival.
Thank you, you too. And thanks for your time. Bless. Cheers.